In 2021, Talk About It Outdoors partnered with an industry-leading brand that has stamped its name on the outdoor industry. Cruiser Saddles, in itself, stands on perfection. And with every climb we make, we elevate ourselves above the rest. In addition to a support to our hunting journey, the men and women behind Cruiser believe in the same principles of life as us. Faith, family, and the blessings of being better as they go in every sit. If your desire to pursue your passions one step ahead of the rest, go ahead and get in the best. Check them out on all the socials or head over to their website at www.cruiser.com. That's CRUZR.com. And tell them to Talk About It Outdoors boys and Chasing Weekends sent you their way. The journey of life has a unique way of being able to create tried and true friendships as we go. In forming those relationships, oftentimes, good things come to follow. Talk About It Outdoors is proudly supported by Cal Hardy, the Barrelhead Land Company. Cal is the leading broker over Georgia and is happy to assist you with finding the place where you can call home. With vast knowledge and an understanding of the ever-evolving real estate market and a unique old-school approach to everything he does, he exemplifies what it means to treat others like you'd want to be treated. Don't settle for being just another number in a phone. Choose Cal Hardy for all your land, home, and commercial real estate needs and become a part of his family. We sure are blessed to have him as a part of ours. Find him on Facebook, Instagram, or give him a call at 770-296-2163. Step back to the times when a feed store was more than just that, and the people inside smiled with friendly faces and provided a place for a talk on life, as well as all your essential farm, livestock, and pet needs. Cherokee Feed and Seed, located in Ball Ground, Georgia, with an additional location in Gainesville, are the hometown supplier of all your cattle, equine, and pet needs, with the added addition of being able to keep your deer herd healthy with protein and minerals. They also carry an assortment of hunting blinds and gear, and you can rest easy knowing the people that support local ball clubs and children's sports are who your hard-earned money is going to. The people here greet you with a handshake and a smile, and Cherokee Feed and Seed give more than just a product. They give you a welcome that'll make you return time and time again. Stop in next time you're in the area and tell them you're part of the Talk About It Outdoors family. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve. LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first. You ready, Nick?
Let's do it.
All right, everybody, Talk About It Outdoors coming to you live from the Cruiser Saddle Studio once again. Nicholas Wilson, Alex DeBoard, and Mr. Caden Watson are here tonight to bring you one that we've been waiting on to get started. We're on the backside of the youth turkey season opener right here in Georgia. Y'all better pull up a chair and sit a while, because I promise you, y'all ain't going to want to miss this one. Biggie Sticks, son, I hope when this one drops out that we've got plenty to talk about when it comes to gobbler turkeys.
Me too, buddy.
It's here.
It's here. It's behind us now.
It's behind us now when this one comes out. Y'all missed an amazing event if you didn't get a chance to come by and see us at the Mill on Etowah at the Reformation Brewery and the Mill on Etowah Sportsman Show weekend before last. Great time. We cannot thank everyone that came out to see us enough. Pistol Creek was there. Talk About It Outdoors, Nose Down. We had our friends from Woodall Game Calls was there, and all kinds of folks was around the horn there, and great fun. Wally Creek was there. They had their dogs out there. Matt, he's come over and sat in on a few podcasts with us, and he was actually in on that episode that we did with the Slim Reaper, or no, it wasn't Bluff Production guys with Cole and them. So.
That's right.
Got a chance to talk with him and spend a lot of time with close friends. Got to see some old buddies we ain't seen in a long time, too. So
we did. It was kind of a slow weekend, though. I think a lot of people were playing ball tournaments and stuff like that. But it was still a good weekend. Saw a lot of good people. And turn my mic up a little bit, would you?
Turn my mic up
just a little bit. Yeah. But, yeah, it was a good, great weekend, man. Got an interesting stat that I shared with the last guest we had earlier.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Cody talked to Cody earlier today, and he said after a 48-hour event, or 48 hours had went by, Sleazy had received more downloads than Chipper Jones in the first 48 hours.
Yeah, on his second episode, yeah, did for sure.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's real impressive.
I told Sleazy, I said, you missed your Hollywood now. And he said, nah, I don't think so.
I don't know about that.
But no, I've got a lot of people said they really enjoyed that. A lot of people's listening to us. So, yeah, y'all keep sharing it out there and go leave us a review. And leave that up there at the front, because it only helps us, guys, because – you know, word of mouth travels better than anything. So y'all help us share this thing out there.
Yeah, and if you're interested in seeing Talk About It Outdoors in other places, you got to share it with your friends. That's a big thing. We share these episodes. If you want to, you know, share it with others, that's a big thing for us. But leaving those reviews on whatever platform you're listening on, whether it be Apple or Spotify, you have no idea how much that helps us. I'll tell you what we'll do, Nick. We'll post this on social media. We'll get Cody to do it. We'll send him a text on it. But if you're listening to this right now, this episode is going to drop out on Monday, March the 25th. From the remainder of March, anyone that leaves a review on Apple or Spotify, we'll pull those. We'll send you a hat. How about that? We'll pick somebody out of that. Not everybody leaves a review, yeah, but we'll pick somebody out of that group. We'll throw it in a hat and we'll pick it out and we'll send somebody a
sounds
hat
like a good
choice.
Idea.
So we'll post that on our social media pages as well.
And if you want to see our faces, go to Chasing Weekends YouTube, because a lot of people just hear this audio and want to see what we look like outside of Instagram. Go watch our YouTube stuff, because we got a lot of turkey episodes. And then when you get finished watching ours and leaving us a comment and a thumbs up, go over to Slim Reaper Productions, because he's dropping his Western tours right now too. So,
and if you're interested in another podcast, you get done with ours, make sure you listen to Meeting Two.
Oh yeah,
our boys over there. And prayers out to our old buddy over at Meeting Two, Dustin. He suffered a little bit of accident. It's gonna set him back for a little bit. So prayers out to you, old buddy. We definitely can't wait to see what turkey season spins up for you in the near future. So. As I said at the beginning of the show, we had a great event at the Mill on Etowah, and we can't. Well, I tell you what, I can't imagine it going any better, because we was busy all doggone weekend.
Real busy.
So yeah.
It was kind of coming waves at times, but I thought Sunday was busier.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You had a line there on Sunday for sure. So
good weather. Started off, it was going to be bad weather, and then it turned out to be good. So
can't thank everyone that's involved with Talk About It Outdoors, our entire team, for showing up, showing out the way they did. You know, people was there from daylight till dark and stayed the whole time. And we appreciate Haley and everyone that puts that event on for what they did for it. So
we want to talk about the first member of the group that went down and swung and missed.
Does he want to speak on that a little bit? Mr. Caden Watson went down to Florida for a little preemptive turkey tour, got ahead of the game like me and you did last year. And, Caden, you got about 5 minutes to tell us what happened. So go short form on it and let us know if you come back successful or you come back with a Wonk, wonk, wow.
Well, Saturday morning, opening day of north of 70. Got there, had done roosted birds. Got in there within 50 yards of them. Had them gobbling. Just thought it was going to draw up to be perfect. Hen flew over my head at fly down. And then gobbler flew over my head at fly down. So I swung around, got ready. And Nick had told me before I got down there, now it's real flat. So the birds are either going to be farther than you think or shorter or closer than you think. Well, I guess I kind of just threw that out the back of my head. He was out there. I thought he was probably 40 yards. And he wasn't 40 yards because I didn't hit him.
Did you even dust him?
I honestly don't know.
See, I think you just got excited and you just...
I probably did.
You didn't have dear old dad down there with you.
Did you shoot your gun before you went?
I did. I shot it. I shot it 20, 30, 40, and I was hitting perfect.
Did you end up ranging that once you took off?
No.
Yeah.
I walked it off, but it was not 40 yards, I tell you that.
Dang.
What did you learn?
That I don't... I'm like my dad and I call too much. Because I learned that because I had three gobblers, and then none of them were committed to come into me. They were all just either hinned up or real nervous to come in. I think it's because I was calling too much.
And what else did you learn to take with you?
Rangefinder.
Well, rangefinder not, like I said when I got here earlier. Unless you stop turkey hunting, that won't be the last one you miss. So
no.
We watched Squirrel miss one at 25 yards on I mean, Benody the other night. So.
It's going to happen. But now you know that, like, I would look at that as saying, hey, I could be a little bit more patient with this bird. Let him walk off and then make a move on him, try to call him back, something like that. So, you probably had more time than you really think to do something.
I think I did, but in my mind I thought, he's going to those hens and I ain't going to get another shot at
him. Right, you had a day and a half to hunt, and you're like, I want to try to get it done. I understand.
Yeah, so I swung around, shot. He kind of took a few steps. I stood up, walked a few steps, and shot again. But at that point, he was too far.
Yeah. Well, that's good, man. I'm glad you got back safe and everything. You had a good time. Congratulations to Hunter. He went down there and smacked one. And I think he called one or two up for another couple guys, and looks like they had a good, safe trip. Sleazy went back down there after our podcast and smoked him one, quick round trip for him.
Congrats to old Cole Irvin going down there smacking him one in Florida.
He did. He's on a roll this year between the deer and the turkey.
That's another show you can check out on YouTube if you get tired of watching or you run out of episodes of Bluff Productions. Mm-hmm. They've got some good content they're dropping out, and I believe Cole's video I just saw on Facebook just dropped out. So
yep.
Check it out. We love all of them people, and you know, we love everybody that's involved in this deal, and people really have got behind this whole Chasing Weekends thing, and boy, I can't wait to show y'all what we're working on for this season. It's going to be a ton of fun. So
Caden's episode drops Monday, or when you hear this podcast, if you listen to it on Monday, whatever date you gave a second ago, Caden's episode from Georgia will be out.
Nice.
So
yeah, and he should have his first video of 2024 coming out shortly thereafter. So
hopefully we got some coming pretty soon right after this. So
you got some good footage on that, didn't you?
Yeah.
So
on my GoPro, at least I know for sure. I ain't watched all my footage back yet on my big camera.
Well, put something together. You know, we're gonna try to do something. Swing and misses are just as good as anything for content. So I love it. So tonight's guest, I don't really know how to introduce them, because I've only been in acquaintance with them for a very, very short period of time. And the impression that this gentleman and his dad made that are coming on tonight was pretty deep. You and I stood in one spot and talked to him for about 2.5 hours, and you had previous conversations with him. And, you know, I'm just going to go right into it and let these guys kind of introduce themselves.
Well, I just want to give a bit backstory real quick. I went up to West Virginia last year to a calling competition. Was sitting there, not by myself, but with a couple of people, and this gentleman was sitting behind me, and we kind of started talking, and he started telling all these stories, and then I told you, I said, I'm going to get this guy on a podcast. We swapped numbers, went through deer season, knew once turkey season got around that we would bring these stories to light. So, again, you met him up there, and He's got some fantastic stories. He's been calling since he was a kid. His dad's been building turkey calls since he was a kid, and yeah, I can't wait to get into this one and hear what they got to hear. Yeah. They got some good stories.
They got some good stories, and the one where he met me for the first time is one we're going to hit right off the rip. So we'll get these boys on right now. You know, Nick, like we've been talking about this whole time as we've got back from Nashville, we talked about these guys off and on. Me and you've went back and forth on these stories. But without further ado, I got to welcome to Talk About It Outdoors, Mr. Corey and Bob Hoon, and it's Hoon like you coon dog. So, fellas, welcome to Talk About It Outdoors.
How you guys doing?
Well, we're better now that we finally got on the phone with y'all, because I think I have lost sleep over what you told on me, Corey, that story you told about meeting me. I just nearly went to the barber as soon as I got back because of that story.
I wish you would have.
Oh, but for everyone that doesn't know, we met these guys at NWTF. I met them a year before and didn't even realize it. So, Corey, go right into telling that story, and then we'll rewind there and let you guys introduce yourself. So where was the first time you saw me, and what was your first reaction?
So it was 2023, not this convention, but the one past, and I was walking down to call in the prelims, and if you guys know where, I think it's still the Jack Daniels, at least it used to be, way back in the day, it used to be Rusty's, but that part of the Opryland right there, my room was on that end. I'm walking down to go call in the prelims, it's early in the morning, and I round the corner, and I get right there where the Rusty's used to be and Jack Daniels is now, and there's Alex DeBoard, and I had no idea who he was, and I'm just, you know, flying through there, and I looked over at him and I said, "Hey buddy, how you doing?" And he said hi, and he said he was there with, you know, Talk About It Outdoors, and we made a little bit of small talk, and I went on about my day. And when I got past him, I kind of shook my head and I said to myself, I said, "Man, that guy needs a haircut right there." And that was it, you know. And I just, you know, went on about my day, and it was just kind of another face in the crowd, you know, nice guy, but he just needed a haircut. And, you know, last year I met Nick, that would have been September of the same year of last year at the contest in, Summersville. It was just outside of Summersville when I met Nick. And then he said he was there. Well, we had a Talk About It Outdoor sweatshirt on. And we got to talking, and he said he was there with Alex, and I was like, "Holy crap, man! That was the guy I told that he needed a haircut." You know, it was my first thought, and I was like, "Man!" But yeah, and then we talked there at the convention this year, and he still needs a haircut, by the way.
He does need a haircut. I would agree with you, Corey.
You can lay off on it now. Now we did the joke's over with, Nick. You can give it up. I'm not cutting my hair. well, and like we said, and that was the story that kind of started our conversation there. And he was nicer than he was at the watering hole.
He was a lot nicer.
He said, "That guy's got a goofy haircut." Yeah. And I probably did then. I probably had lines cutting the side of my hair or something crazy going on. But
Corey Powell texts me to this day, and he says, "Man, if I ever have a bad day now, I think about Corey telling Alex about the haircut up there at the watering hole." And it cheers me up. So,
I love it. I love it. And it's funny how you meet somebody and you kind of rewind, you get to tell a story like that. And I'm so thankful you told that story, because I have laughed about it. And I love hearing stuff like that, because it may not have been the greatest impression, but at least I made an impression on you that first time we met.
I'll tell you, there's something else. Go ahead, Corey.
No, I was just going to say, I was glad to hear you say that, because when Nick got a hold of me to do this show, I told him, I said, "Man, I hope Alex isn't mad that I said that about his hair." And he said, "You just laughed about it." So that made me feel better.
No, we've got this crowd right here. If you ain't got thick skin around us, me and Nick, to this day, I would have hated him if I didn't have thick skin, because he gave me such a hard time growing up. But you got to, and now I've give it back to him now. We stay on each other's tail pretty good, but I think that's what great friends do. If you ain't beating each other up and picking each other up at the same time, you ain't doing it right. So, and no, I love sure. it, man.
I want to say one thing before we back up. You know, what you're about to hear in this episode, Corey has he's got a Rain Man memory, and he can remember a lot of stuff. So I hope you guys get a lot out of this episode, because especially if you're in a calling competition or want to get into it, you're going to hear a lot of good stories. So
Yeah, and I want to start with Mr. Bob, your dad, and I want him to kind of paint a picture of where he grew up and tell that side of the story, and we'll kind of go through your hunting history. Just a little brief story there, if you would, about how you got your start in hunting and where you grew up at, and then we can get the young whippersnapper to come right on in behind him.
All right. Well, I grew up a long time ago. I'm 60, and I watched Kurt Gowdy on television, Wide World of Sports, Evel Knievel. It's a long time ago, and I saw all these faraway places that people fished and hunted, and I never thought I'd ever make it. You know, I just, where I grew up, small town, nobody ever did those things. And I ended up, I've got the Royal Slam now, and I fish in Wyoming every summer, and I've come a long way. I've been real successful in life. And when I first qualified for the Grand Nationals, I had no idea what it was. I didn't even know. You read magazines, and you saw the contests in the magazines, which you don't see now in the magazines at all, you know. And you read the turkey caller pamphlet that the NWTF put out, and you saw who won contests. And that was a great thing, you know, and I never thought I'd ever meet those guys. And then finally, you know, I said, man, I'm going to go to a contest. I knew nobody. And I won the first sanctioned contest I was in, which would have been in the fall of 93. And so then I met a guy there that lived a mile from me, Johnny Rikushin. So I found out where he lived. I went down and visited him, and we're looking through the NWTF magazine, and they were advertising the contest, which would have been in Columbus. And I said, how does a guy get to go to something like that? And he told me I could go. So, okay, spring comes. I go to that contest. I had no idea. I mean, none. You get there, and there's guys, Joe Drake, Ricky Joe Bishop, Walter Perry. And there was no way I could compete with those guys, none at all. And you didn't, at that time, there wasn't YouTube or, you know, I don't even know if the internet was then. So the only way you got to see that was to go. Or somebody had a VHS tape or something, you know, and it was a real eye-opener. I mean, it's totally different today. I mean, you got all the YouTube, you have all the avenues, Facebook, everything to hear those guys call. But back then you didn't. You had to go and take your knocks and get beat. And I never did qualify for the finals, which was, you know, a goal. That was like way out there, just way, way out there. And I never did qualify, you know, for the finals, but I had a great time. And once Corey started calling, I was pretty much, I couldn't do both. I couldn't call and, you know, give him the best shot I could possibly give him. And he probably could have called in the juniors earlier, but I didn't want him to call unless he had a chance to place, you know. And he finally got good enough, and he did. He called in, what year was it, Corey?
2001 was the first year I called the Nationals.
2001 was the first year he called at the Nationals, and he ended up finishing sixth. A reed flipped on him, or he possibly could have got in the top five, but he didn't. He didn't quite make it.
Bob,
it was a great time.
Bob, take us even further back. Like, where'd you guys grow up? You guys are from Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes, from PA. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, southwestern corner of Pennsylvania.
Did you grow up as a turkey hunter to begin with, or did you get into it later in your life and use a deer hunter to begin with?
I got into it by listening to the stories of he would have been my uncle, his step uncle. He would go over to my grandpap's, and they'd sit out under the tree and have too many beers or whiskey, whatever they was drinking, and he'd tell stories of turkey hunting. So I always listened to that and wanted to go. And he had a great story of a turkey calling contest he went to. And he was standing in line to register, and the guys around him started warming up and practicing. And he thanked the one guy, and the guy said, "What are you thanking me for?" And he goes, "Let me know I'm in the wrong line." So that's pretty much how that all started.
That was Tommy Mosier.
Tommy Mosier, yeah.
Now back in those early days of it, there was quite the interesting cast of characters, and you went through quite a few of those old stories and stuff. But take us through some of those early contests and what did people do? I mean, did they just show up in old, you know, beat up trucks and stuff like that, or was it, you know, were they coming in hordes, or was they by themselves, or how was the scene back then?
Well, they wore cowboy hats, and they had mullets, and they enjoyed themselves. I mean, a buddy of mine, in fact, he just went to his first calling contest after 9 years, and it was like we'd never not went to one. It was good. You look at some of the old pictures. Those guys got their cowboy hats on and vests. They would wear vests with patches on them, who they were sponsored by and stuff. And then when you went to the Nationals, those guys wore really nice, you know, tailored shirts and nice graphics on them. A little bit different than today.
Maybe that's something we need to bring back, Nick. We're gonna get us some tailored vests.
Y'all go ahead.
You gonna have to wear one too. We're gonna take a unanimous vote. We'll get Corey that's in okay. one too. Now I think I might have asked you this up there in Nashville, and it was always funny to me because this was something that most people today don't even think about. But did folks sit around in there and watch it? Did they smoke cigarettes inside of whatever building y'all were in?
They did. That was like when the cigarettes were kind of phasing out, but they would still smoke cigarettes. There would be decent crowds at certain contests. You know, like Central West Virginia had a decent crowd. And the contest went all day, like a lot of contests today. They had all the divisions and stuff. And then there was a lot of contests where you went in there and they had the juniors, which would range in age from 15 and under to 17 and under, and you would have the open. And the contest lasted a couple hours tops. There was no friction or anything like that. There'd be some guys run some friction in the open. Mm-hmm. Some guys were very good. But the contests were over quicker, a lot quicker, and it didn't take as much time. And I enjoyed that. Because, you know, you tied up your whole day, but it wasn't dark to dark, let's say.
Go ahead, Corey.
There was many more of them too. And this is after the period that Dad's talking about, but there was many years there where you could call within 3 or 4 hours of where we live there in southwestern PA every weekend from, you know, maybe the first of the year, all the way through turkey season. You could drive 3 hours and go to a contest every weekend. And sometimes you'd get lucky and there would be a contest on a Sunday on your way home. So you could hit two of them. That happened fairly frequently.
Now, were they big money contests back then, or was it, you know, pretty low entry fee, low payout, or was it, you know, what was the draw for them to go, Bob?
The draw for them to go was to qualify.
Okay.
To get your qual, and you had to win back then. You had to win a contest. So, you know, you would try to find one that you know, maybe some guys skipped or they was having a contest somewhere else and you were trying to, at least I was, not everybody was like that.
Right.
I like to skip. And then there was a few contests in the fall. And the fall was a time you could qualify too, because it wasn't as popular.
Right.
You know, guys were hunting or whatever. And the payouts weren't always that good. A buddy of mine won $1.87 one time.
But what was the entry fee on a contest like that?
See, the entry fees weren't really bad. It might have been $15 or $20, you know, to enter. It wasn't like today, $50 to enter. But, yeah, you got to figure that's 20 years ago, too, you know.
Right. $20, 20, 30 years ago was a pretty good lump of change. I just got Have you got any of those old pictures, Bob, from the calling contest early on when them guys was wearing them big cowboy hats and stuff?
I don't. A buddy of mine has some videos, lots of videos, and I told him the other day that he has to post them on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And yep. I think they'd be a hit.
Well, if he don't get them posted on there, let us know. We can help him out with that because that would be amazing to see. And I think that, you know, it predates.
He might have some pictures.
Well, I would love to see some of those pictures to be able to share out because I think that would be really cool to be able to tell and paint a picture of those early calling contests.
Well, Bob even brought up a good point up there at NWTF when we were standing there. I don't know if you remember it, but he was talking about, like, getting all the guys back there that compete to take a big photo, you mm-hmm. know. That way they can continue to keep that legacy of just having those photos so people could go back in 15 or 20 years and look at it. Ain't that what you were saying, Bob?
Yes. Yeah. I just think it would be something that was very minimal cost, and I think the guys would really enjoy it. You know, going through a drawer 20 years from now and go, look, you know, here's this guy, here's that guy. You know, I look back and see, you know, some of the guys have died, you know, and you almost forget them, you know.
So you
hit, see them once in a year, some of them a couple times a year, and you think about them, you know.
So you hit on a couple.
I think it would be really something.
You hit on a couple of guys from the South a second ago, talking about Joe and Walter and Ricky Joe Bishop. Who was the heavy hitters up in the northern part, up around your home?
Matt Van Sice, Sammy Wirtz. I don't know where he's at now. Sammy Wirtz, I don't know if he ever placed, but he definitely made the cut several times. He doesn't call. A guy by the name of Tilberg, Pat Strasser, John Eagle was very good. Rodney Eckstein. Pennsylvania had quite a few good callers.
Still do.
Yeah.
Missouri was really strong back in too.
Okay.
Yeah, you had, I mean, Billy Argus come out of Missouri. Chris Parrish, back in those days, he came out of Missouri.
Now
Walter Parrott.
Well, yeah, Walter Parrott.
Now, where were these calling contests being held at? Gymnasiums and stuff like that back in the early days?
A lot of gymnasiums. They would have Will Primos, Harold Knight, Denny Galvis. They would have like a seminar, and they would have the contest in conjunction with the seminar.
Okay.
And, you know, people were very, very interested, and that took a hit when, you know, the internet took over and they didn't have to go.
Do you think there's a resurgence coming? And I want to, because you've seen the early days, now you've seen the later days, and now you've seen what it is today. Do you think there's a resurgence of these calling contests coming back, in your opinion?
I would hope so. I mean, I think the format has to change. You know, who wants to hear the announcer always saying, caller number one, playing Yelp at a hand. Caller number two, assembly yelp. You know, that repetitiveness. And the contest being as long as they are, people's not going to sit through all of that. That format hasn't worked. And Mark Prudhomme's trying to change it. He's doing a fantastic job. And I know, you know, different guys don't like it and stuff, but what they're doing, changing it, I think is working. I think a few more people stay to watch the finals than they used to.
And I think
after caller.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think that the opportunity to bring in a little bit more excitement to it, you know, Nick and I've talked about this a lot, that there's a buzz around it for, and I'm a guy that's coming into it fresh on the, you know, scene, only hit two calling competitions and been able to do it. And the first one I went to, that's exactly what I said. It's kind of repetitive, kind of redundant. It gets kind of boring. But there's a little bit of an excitement that's coming into some of these contests now with the people that are there. And I think the problem for me, and I've told Nick this, there's not enough information out there, you know, like magazines. You probably had magazine articles that were written up on calling competitions you could read up on back in the 90s. Well, you don't see you don't see a video on YouTube about, and that's where all the information comes from, YouTube or social media. You don't see posts. You see, this guy won this calling contest in Pennsylvania, in Alabama, in Georgia, but you don't see a video that says, hey, this is what's going on, and an explanation. And now what we've been able to do with our platform is explain it to people. And I know I've had conversations with guys just like you have as of late that they're interested in going to these competitions because they can understand it a little bit. We've lost touch with the ability to learn. And, you know, it's nice to share out that you've won a contest, but there's no story behind it and how you got there. And I think that's something that we're trying to do a better job at, is tell the stories just like we're telling right now in a resurgence of these calling contests.
And the videos that, like, HS Strut and all them calling companies you put out, they focused on the callers a lot more.
Right.
And that was nice. And people that are reluctant to go to contests to try to learn, I don't think they really understand. The callers are pretty friendly people.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they'll talk to people. And a guy could learn a whole lot by going to a contest and just talking to people.
Make a lot of good and friends there.
Yeah, the friction calls have came so far. The box calls are fantastic. You know, and it doesn't take much, you know, to get into a contest and learn what you're doing.
Do you think those early contests, they kind of slowed down because of the older guys getting older and getting out of it? Or was it, like you said, was it social media and the internet and everything else that really slowed it down?
I think that's what slowed it down. And, the kids seem to be involved in it today, but I don't see the kids advancing up into the adult calling contest. There doesn't seem to be a lot of them advancing into the Grand Nationals, because I don't think they're ever getting past the friction part.
Right.
You know, once they start running friction, and there is a friction division, don't get me wrong, but I just like to see, you know, kids advance their skill level. I know I'm going to get beat up for that, you know, but I just, that was the natural progression back then. Cause if you wanted to win in the junior division, you better run some air.
I like it. I mean, I think that's an interesting topic to bring up, because a lot of guys are running just friction, and they can go and win just friction. But the advancement, the big calling contest is the air. I mean, let's face it. Those are the ones that everybody wants to try to get to that level and achieve, but they probably ain't willing to drive that commitment home enough to get into that air. I know I've struggled with it, still struggle with it every day trying to do the air, but it is an interesting conversation to be had for the advancement. And like you said, guys aren't starting very young and continuing to go anymore. It's a lot of, well, I mean, realistically, you look at you, Nick. I mean, you turkey hunted your whole life, and you're really an adult onset caller, where these younger guys are in it, but they're not there from the old days. Now, there is a gentleman that's sitting in the same room as you, Bob, that's came up through the ranks, and I want to talk to him for a minute, and let's kind of get Corey's take on it. And Corey, what was the first year that you really went turkey hunting? Not turkey calling. I want to start with the turkey hunting first, and then we'll get into the calling aspect of it.
Man, the first year I went turkey hunting, so it's a little bit different for me, because when I was growing up in PA, you couldn't hunt until you were 12. Anything, rabbits, squirrels, turkeys, deer, whatever. And as a matter of fact, you couldn't take your hunter's safety test until you were 12, or maybe they let you take it at like 11 and a half or something. But I remember when I first started hunting, my mom was scared to death for me to go spring turkey hunting with Dad. She wouldn't let me go. So Dad, even though it was illegal at the time, but I was 6-7 years old, and Dad would take me out shoot squirrels. And it took a long time to kill a squirrel. It took a long time. We'd go nights after school. We'd go almost every weekend. And the equipment, yeah, they just brought that up. It was so much different when I was six. I mean, Dad had won a break open H&R Partner 20 gauge in an NWTF banquet. And I was 6 years old. I'll never forget. We shot it in my grandpa's backyard. And I shot it about 10 feet. And the pattern just hit the dirt and dirt flew everywhere. And Dad said, let's go get a 410. So we did. And then I took to missing squirrels. And it took a long time to miss squirrels. But finally got a squirrel killed. And then I was hard on the squirrels for a while. And probably, I'm guessing here, 8 years old, 9 years old, still. And this was in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of turkeys at the time at home. And Dad's always loved the fall turkey hunt. So then again, we kind of got out of the squirrels and we were now focusing on trying to get a turkey. And it was almost every weekend and maybe a night or two after work, for me at the time it was school, but 8 years old, we'd go hunt and we'd break up a flock of turkeys and call them in and they'd come in there and I'd miss them all the time. And it was different too back then. Not only the equipment was different, but there was no blinds. This was sitting your butt in the dirt and back up against a tree. And I was missing them all over the place. Couldn't kill a turkey to save my life.
You'd get excited.
And cause I would get so excited. so excited. And then finally, and I don't know what strings Dad had to pull, to get me to go spring turkey hunting, but I was 10 years old and through the turkey calling piece, we'd known some people and we got invited to the Ohio one shot turkey hunt. That was in Ohio. That was in Ashtabula County in the northeast part of Ohio. And I was 10. And before that started, maybe a couple weeks or a month, they gave all the kids that were in this hunt, they gave them a Mossberg shotgun, a 20 gauge. Mossberg 500. It might have been like the first year the Bantams came out. And actually, I still hunt with that gun. That is my turkey gun. So we go up there, and we went to a firing range, and they give the kids the guns out. We patterned them. And a couple weeks later, we go do the Ohio one-shot turkey hunt. And in the spring, I'd hunted a handful of times at this point, and I would always laugh. I mean, uncontrollably laugh at the point when you know a turkey's coming, when he gobbles that last time and you know he's committed, you're going to look at him here in just a minute. I would just uncontrollably laugh. It was like I was watching stand-up comedy, and I was sitting between Dad's legs, and he would always cover my mouth, and you could still hear me laughing. And for whatever reason, that spring morning in 2004, that turkey walked up there, and Dad said, he said, go ahead and miss and let's get this over with. And for whatever reason, that day I killed the turkey. And then from then on, the giggles were gone. I didn't laugh anymore. But you still get excited.
Right.
That's kind of my first turkey story. But there was to kill the first one, there was I wouldn't even want to venture at how many I'd missed. I mean, it's definitely double digits.
Wonder why you would giggle so much.
Just so much superior.
Wonder why you would giggle so much just because of the goblin, or because you thought they were funny looking birds, or
no, I don't really know. I mean, I was little, but I think I was so excited. And I think you guys know what it's like when you hear one gobble and you know for a fact that he's coming. I think the excitement got me. And the other thing I think that got me too was that I wanted to do it so bad, and I just got so excited that, you know, this is it. This time it's going to happen. And then I'd blow it. I mean, every time. I mean, I missed them with that H&R, man, that 20 gauge. They had to be close because you're shooting lead sixes in the barrel on that gun. It's probably only 16 or 18 inches, got a hammer on it. Dad would pull the hammer back for me and I'd line the beads up, and they, at the time, you know, they had to be 25 yards, maybe 30 tops, and missed them all the time.
I learned a few things from that. And one of the today with the scopes and everything, and the guns are so easy to sight. You know, the optics, everything, all of that. But one thing that I did learn hunting with him, and I should have put him in a better position, took me a couple hunts and I figured it out. He'd go, "I can't see him. I can't see him." Well, he couldn't see him because he was down so low on the ground that any hump or log or anything blocked his view. So I started getting him up off the ground, and that was a game changer for sure. But that Mossberg with, you know, the good sights on it, and it was just a better gun, and he'd got bigger. So, you know, it made it. He got more confident in himself, you know, and it made it. But, you know, I still always like for a kid to have one shot. That's it. One shot, one shell in the gun. When that thing goes off, you know you got the other shells in your pocket. Nothing dumb's going to happen.
Right.
You know, when that gun goes off, the kid's out of shells.
I like
nothing
that.
Nothing dumb's going to happen. And, you know.
It's very interesting talk. I mean, that's a tip right there. I mean, that's a very take from that. If you listen to this, you know, a lot of folks is throwing automatics and everything else in these kids' hands. There's a lot can go wrong after that second shell goes in there and excitement strikes in.
Yep. 100%. And to Dad's point there too, the gun I first started hunting with, I mean, there was one bead at the end of the barrel. And then when I got that Mossberg, I mean, it was like a whole nother world. I had fiber optic sights. I mean, and you lined the three beads up, and it was gone from like a flintlock rifle to a Remington 700. I mean, it was night and day difference.
Well, now y'all are from PA, and so I got to ask this because we always have for anyone we've had on. Did y'all flintlock hunt for deer or turkeys or anything back in the day? Did you, Bob?
A little bit, but I never really got into it. I didn't like the bad weather there after Christmas.
Right. We've heard that.
PA is the only state I believe still has that hunt.
Yep. Still to this day has a week long. Yep. Flintlock only. That's pretty cool. I mean, but was it when you were, was it a draw to people to still do that early back in the day?
Yeah. And it's pretty popular today. A lot of guys get out with those flintlocks. Guys are pretty good with them too.
Yeah. Well,
it's a cool time of year to have that season because it starts the day after Christmas. And a lot of folks, they take a week off work. Things like that. So they're home, and I would see it when I was still living there, but there would be, you know, three or four guys, they'd get together the day after Christmas or 2 days after, and they would go flintlock hunt for a day and just have a ball. And maybe they killed a deer, maybe they didn't, but it was the tradition piece of it and getting together with their friends.
Well, and I got to make mention of our good buddy, RP Scritchfield, who's a big part of Talk About It Outdoors and everything that we've done. I don't know if he's one of a very – I know he's a very small handful, but he completed a grand slam about 2 years ago with a flintlock. He went around the country and did it all with a flintlock. So pretty wow. Cool story there to do.
Hey,
yeah.
Let me ask you guys this, because most of our listeners are from the South and we don't have a fall turkey season. And I've read a lot of things. You guys go in there, you still do that? You still go in there and bust those flocks up in the fall and call them back in?
I love fall turkey hunting.
And why so? Because do they gobble as much, or do you just enjoy calling them? What do you like about it so much, Bob?
I like it. It's the time of year you can get out. When I could hear better, you could hear them scratching way off. You can hear them. And if you knew where the turkeys were, you have a great chance of breaking that flock up. A lot of places I got to hunt now, the properties have gotten smaller and smaller. You know, properties have got divided. I don't get the opportunity as much to get out and break them up. But to break them up and all the sounds that you hear, and the turkeys coming back in, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful time. You can hear them scratching in the leaves. And Corey got in on a good fall turkey hunt with Brett Berry. He hunts with dogs. And Matt Van Sice was with us, and he's always enjoyed that. And that was Brett's, I believe, first hunt with the dogs.
It was definitely his first dog. I don't know if it was the first hunt with that dog, but we went up and hunted with Brett, and Matt was there for the weekend, and the dog's name was Tess. And it was just as Brett got into it. And the dogs is kind of similar to what you would do with, you know, just as a man by yourself. But the goal there is to find a flock of turkeys, and it's totally different from spring. I mean, you want to go in there and bust them up. You want to get them flying all different directions. And that's what's so cool about it is you're getting to hear all the fall turkey talk. You're hearing keying, you're hearing Jake's cock, you're hearing assembly yelping, all kinds of different noises. The strategy is totally different because, like I said, you're trying to scare them clear out of the county, and it may take 10 minutes for them to come back in, or it may take 3 hours. But with the dog, when that hunt with Brett, you just walk around. I mean, it's like you're just taking a hike, and the dog's out there running circles in front of you, and then, you know, the dog smells the turkeys and it finds them, and you're obviously hunting on sign. But the dog busts them up, and then Brett had the dog, and the dog went in a great big camouflage duffel bag, and just its head was sticking out of it. And that dog would know that the turkeys were coming before you did, because that dog could smell them, and you'd hear that dog start growling. And when that dog started growling, you knew it was getting ready to get real pretty fast. But yeah, that was my second turkey ever. That was in the fall with Brett. So in Ohio.
Did you guys do a lot of calling after the dog split them up and you put the dog in the bag?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, the dog would never bark though as the turkeys got closer.
No, the dog was trained. The dog was trained. That dog just sat right there in that bag. Yep. Just its head sticking out.
So I met a guy in NWTF year before last. I was sitting up there at the watering hole of all places, and a guy came walking up to me, he said, "Mind if I sat down?" I said, "No." He said, "Boy, my feet are killing me." He said, I'll sit down here with you." And of course, I was sitting on a cooler. And he said, "You got anything in that cooler?" And I said, "Yeah, I got something in here." And he said, "You got any extra?" And I said, "No, I don't have any extra. I ain't never had any extra, but I got one you can have." And I gave, and his name is Andrew Noble. And Andrew and I have become friends on Facebook. And he didn't get to come to NWTF this year, but him and his wife train dogs. They live in New York, and they do a lot of fall turkey hunting. And he's invited me up to. I want to go do it one time. I think it would be awesome it's a tradition that a lot of people don't know about. And we've talked about getting Andrew and his wife on to talk dogs and stuff like that at some point. But was it just as exciting as spring for you, Bob and Corey both? I mean, or was it just a different kind of excitement?
I like it better. I do. You get to hear them. I really, really do like it. And them hen wing bones make some nice sounds too.
And you know, when you're sitting there, if you get a good break, I mean, when you break them and all the turkeys go one direction, it makes it pretty tough because they don't need to come back where they were broke.
Right.
To get the flock back together. But if you get a good break and they scatter and go, you know, 360 degrees around you, I mean, you may have two turkeys coming from the front side. There might be four coming from the right, two coming from the left, and then one coming behind you. And it's just a game of listening to them all come back together. And they can be coming from any direction. And the sounds you get to hear, I mean, you really get to hear the turkey vocalizations.
You think that helps northern callers, Corey, from a calling standpoint?
I think it certainly doesn't hurt by any means. But I will say this, I mean, you get to hear all the sounds, but you know, when you kill one in the fall, I mean, you don't know if it's a 9-pound hen or maybe a 12-pound Jake a lot of the times, because they were just born in the summer until you get up to them. Right. But definitely hearing all the sounds that you get to hear, certainly helps, because they're much more vocal in the fall because they're split up, and you got the young turkeys that were just born in the early summer, that they have to get back to the flock, and that's their whole goal. So you get to hear them talk, and you get to hear the hens, you get to hear it all. So it certainly helps.
Do fall
a good tip is when you break the flock up, or slightly before you break it, if you get the opportunity to see them first, figure out what the flock's made up of. Is it made up of gobblers, jakes, or combination of small hens and, you know, everything? You've got a better chance of killing one if it's small hens, because they're more apt to come back to the spot that's broke.
Yep.
Do fall turkey hunters get into it with fall deer hunters? Is that a thing?
I don't know if it's really a thing, but I mean, I could see a guy sitting in a deer stand and on a piece of public, and you go through their fall turkey hunting
with a dog.
I could see somebody getting kind of frustrated, especially if that guy's watching a flock of turkeys 50 yards away, and you come running through there like a madman trying to break them up. it'd probably ruin his day pretty fast.
Now do you get them? Can you get the gobblers fired up in the fall?
They'll gobble in the fall.
Yeah,
they will. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think you, and this could be totally wrong, but I'm sitting here thinking that he said that assembly yelp. I guess when you break them up, you've got that lead hen, you're cranking on that box call or whatever, you know, getting that assembly yelp going, and then you start doing some keys and everything. Yeah, boy, that'd be something. We're gonna have to do that, Nick. We're gonna have to have a fall turkey hunt. Anybody need a bow? I got a bow for sale. We're giving it up now.
It's
fun too, because you get to call a lot in the fall too, and everybody that turkey hunts, they love to call. So when that flock's coming in, man, you can really lean on it. You can call a lot. So that's fun too, because you get to sit there and call.
Corey, let's get into, and your dad can take it over. You can take it over. Let's talk about call building. So, Bob, you started early on. I assume you started using a diaphragm, and go through how you started building these things, or I guess you started buying them first, and then you discovered building them. Walk us through all that, because Corey told us some stories, or told me some stories up in West Virginia, and I'm anxious for everybody to hear this.
I bought diaphragm calls to begin with, you know, Preston Pittman's and different ones. It didn't matter. I wanted to buy them. And then for whatever reason, I wanted to build some. And there was always ads for materials in the back of like Outdoor Life or Field and Stream. And so I sent some money in. They sent me back like two frames, some latex and some tape. Well, the first one, I just ruined it, trying to figure it out. And I sat there and I said, I got this piece of formica from the sink top, and I laid the frame on there, the half, and I drew the frame on there and then cut the formica out, and it was pretty much the thickness of the frame. So then I laid the frame in that groove, and then I stretched the latex across. Now tape down one side, stretch the latex on the other side, and then tape it down. And then I did the same with the next reed and the next reed. Fold the frame back over, crimp the tab over, and put the tape in. The tape for the mouth, the Johnson & Johnson tape. And it worked. And it worked, and I made lots and lots of calls like that. Mad then, I don't know when they did it or whatever, but they made a call press that was exactly like that. And it was red, and it folded over to smash the frame. And I made lots and lots of calls with it, and it worked. It was very effective. I don't still make them that way, but I could. Nobody of mine still does.
How were people building them back then, like on a production level at that production? Was people using that method? Or obviously, I doubt the Thad's machine was come that far or goes that far back, does it?
No, I don't think, but I believe there was presses. But they operated sort of the same as me, but when they slid the tape over, there was a lever that come down and crimped it.
Okay.
Crimped the frame. They were way cruder than Thad's.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of handheld jigs.
Right. Now when you were...
They would stretch. It would stretch the latex with, it would crank, and it would pull the frames apart. Not the frame, but the latex would stretch.
Now, when you were laying these latex on this countertop, was you just, I guess you were marking how far you were stretching them with something?
Yeah, it would have been on my right-hand side looking at it. I had a mark, and I would lay the masking tape on the side of the edge where the frame was, and I would pull it to that mark. And then, finish taping it down, and I'd do the same thing with the next one. You had an opportunity to make every reed a different stretch.
Were these lead frames?
They were aluminum frames.
Okay.
Was Bob the one you told me about that got run out of the local gas station for buying all the prophylactic out of the bathroom, run out of quarters?
He ran out of quarters.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was Bob. You told me that was.
That was a popular thing back then, and they still do it. They still cut prophylactics.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually get on Ron Epley's website. The last time I was on there, he's still selling condoms.
He does, yeah. They're unused. they come in a big bag, but I ordered some.
They weren't pre-stretched.
I ordered some when I first started building calls, and I had them in a bag, and I thought, I don't want my wife to see these things. I'm up to something. So I threw them in the trash.
Oh, my goodness. I can imagine the UPS guy coming up to the door in a clear plastic bag. Thinking,
these yours, buddy?
These yours? Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's good stuff right there. Well, so, and you, now, you've only ever built mouth calls, right, Bob? Or did you dabble in any of the other like fishing calls or anything?
I made some wing bones and some scratch boxes.
Got you.
Tinkered around with that stuff.
You talked about hen bones. A lot of people don't, especially where we live, a hen is, you don't kill a hen. But in the northern states, hen in the fall season, that's when you take hens, right?
Yes.
Yep.
So
you can get a bearded hen in the spring, but, people frown on it, but I shot one a couple years ago, and I had no idea. I had no idea that it was a bearded hen.
Yeah, I remember like it was yesterday. I mean, a gobbler and a hen coming across the field, and the hen was out in front of the gobbler, and she's standing there. Me and Dad are probably 40 yards apart sitting in this little tree line. He's 40 yards, dead to my right. And that hen gets out in the middle of this field, and she stands there and just cuts as pretty as you please, and about an 8-inch beard coming right out of her chest. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, man, this is cool. And that strutter, he comes right up there to her, and they get up there close to Dad, and boom, the gun goes off, and the gobbler flew off, and the hen's laying there flopping. and we get up to the turkey, and Dad said, man, that's a nice gobbler. He's got a big beard. I said, Dad, that was a hen. I think he shot the wrong one.
Did have a nice beard, though.
Well, here in Georgia, but it specifically states you can't kill a bearded hen. I mean, it has to be a male turkey, and that's got some boys in trouble around here a few times that they've killed a bearded hen. So,
Corey, let's.
I'd say that makes it a little bit tough there. I mean, because obviously you want to kill a turkey with a beard in the spring, but I think that'd be really hard, especially for a younger guy or maybe somebody that's never done it before, a kid maybe especially. That's an interesting rule. I didn't know that was a law down there.
Hey, while we're on turkey hunting, real quick before we get back on the competition, you got to tell that story about I don't remember which one of y'all were throwing up, Josh and somebody else.
Oh, yeah, we were in Kentucky, and ironically, we were about. I actually hunted that same piece of dirt 2 years ago. I live about 40 minutes from it now. It's kind of funny how life plays out, but. I was hunting with Dad and Josh Grossenbacher, and it was Kentucky youth season, and it was 2006. And Dad has always thrown up. I mean, I would kill a deer or a turkey as a kid, and still to this day, and I've kind of caught a little bit of this problem, but you get so excited and you're kind of spitting up and throwing up a little bit. But we caught two turkeys in. I actually killed two with one shot that year. Two long beards come up there and killed two, and I'm down there, dealing with the turkeys, and I turn around and look, and Dad was throwing up, which was no surprise at all because I'd seen it. And I look at Josh, and he's doing the same thing. So they kind of both have the same problem.
Oh, that adrenaline gets to surgery. I do it. I mean, if I get really overexerted, excited, especially if I get worked up, Dad knows we were all, and I used to blame it because I swallowed my snuff and I don't even dip snuff anymore hardly. It was that exact thing happens to me. It ain't gutting a deer or anything else. It ain't that. It's just I get so doggone excited. I get to gagging. It's dry heaving's what I get to do. I really don't ever throw up much, but maybe it's that medicine. I think that medicine I'm on now because I realized that I hadn't done that lately.
If you didn't do it during that Facebook Live we was just on a second ago, I think you're fine. Corey, let's go into talking about some competition calling because you've obviously had a pretty good career. And what age did you start doing it?
The first year I called at the Nationals I was 7 years old, and that would have been in 2001. Dad and I were sitting here before we got on the phone with you all trying to figure out the first contest I ever called in, and neither of us could figure it out. And I told Dad, you know, we kind of keep a record of different stuff you've done hunting wise and calling wise. And I guess at the time we just didn't keep track of it. Right now we wish we would have, but, 2001, I was 7 years old. I called my first Nationals. And I was so little when I walked on the stage, I don't think anybody in the crowd knew I was on the stage other than me and the MC, because there was a strutting turkey right there in the corner when you come up the ramp, and I wasn't tall enough to get over the top of the fan. So when I walked out, when he announced the first call and I walked to the middle of the stage, everybody knew I was there. But until then, you couldn't see me. But yeah, that was my first Grand Nationals, and I placed in 2002. I got second. There's kind of a funny story with that. They actually gave plaques that year. It was the only year that I've known them to give plaques, and these weren't like Sandy Brady plaques. These were, you know, just wooden. It's a walnut plaque, and it's got the old NWTF logo on it, and then everything's etched into it, the division and the date and things like that. So anyway, I'm a little kid, and I get second, and Rob Keck handed me the trophy, and there's a picture. Rob Keck's a great big tall guy. Everybody knows who Rob Keck is, but and I was wee little, like I said, and I was coming across the stage, and Rob Keck's leaning down to hand me this trophy, and he's almost bent over like he's getting ready to pick something up off the ground.
Joe Drake
handing this trophy to this little kid, and Joe Drake was there. I think he was the MC. So the top five are up there. We get our pictures taken, and it's kind of all I can do to hold this plaque. I'm only 8 years old, and we get back down the ramp, and Dad, he still wasn't back there yet. He was out in the crowd with Mom, and the folks from the NWTF are asking who got what place, because there was additional prizes. And there was actually a set of luggage that they gave me. So now I'm trying to wrestle this plaque, and I got this great big Boyt luggage bag that's about 3 feet long. And inside of that, there was a backpack and a shotgun case and all this kind of stuff. And I forgot one other thing too. This is back in the time that they gave in the junior division, they were giving savings bonds. So I got a plaque and then I got a savings bond, but you didn't get the savings bond on the stage. You got a great big check, like the ones that they give out in Happy Gilmore. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool, but I ended up winning the juniors in 2009, and then made the cut twice. So it's been a pretty good run.
So you've got the luggage, a check, a plaque, and Bob, you just sitting back there thinking, where in the world is that boy at? Why ain't he walked out from back there yet?
he probably had to go to the bathroom. I think he might have been throwing up.
It's possible.
Oh, my.
Corey, it's actually funny, and I'll go ahead and tell everybody, it's actually funny you brought up Rob, because he's going to be on next week's podcast. So we're looking forward to that one as well.
Definitely. Rob is awesome. Rob is a great guy, and I'm glad to see him back here in recent years, for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned, and I just wrote this note down here, if you don't mind, to go ahead and share it. But like you said, you've made the cut twice now, and you made the cut this year. And you guys actually finished what in the team this year? What was that?
We were fourth.
Okay, you're fourth in the team. And if you don't mind, real quick, if you can tell us that story real quick. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the whole thing, but you was telling me about your mom and something that she gave you.
Oh. Man, when I was a kid, I was scared almost to walk up on the stage because it was a huge stage, and I'm just a wee little kid. So they had me down there the night before, you know, looking at the stage, and there was the clock, and I'd called in contests before, but there was never a clock. And Nick knows what that clock looks like. It's great big. You can't miss it. And I was kind of intimidated as a kid. So my mom, she goes to the Opry Mills Mall, and she bought this, and I don't know where she found it, some little trinket shop or something. But it was a dinosaur. It was about an inch tall, had a rubber band on it, and she strapped it on my shirt. So I wore that for a handful of years because I was intimidated, and kind of got out of it there later when I called the intermediates and stuff. And when I got out of it, I called the last time in the intermediates in 2010, and then got to playing baseball and different things, and didn't get back to the Nationals until 2020. And I called in 2020, and mom gave me a dinosaur. And for all those years, you pack that thing around, and you know how she didn't lose it. It's a million wonders, because like I say, he's only about an inch tall, but she packed that thing forever.
He got to hunt with his mother one time.
That's a story in itself.
Let's hear it.
So dad was sick, and it was youth season in PA, and I'd went out and roosted a turkey. I was actually driving at the time. It was my last youth season. So dad was sick, and he couldn't go that morning, and mom wouldn't let me go by myself. So she wanted to go. So we get in there, and we crawl underneath this turkey, and he gobbles right at daylight, and I killed him right off the roost. But we're getting up there to where I wanted to sit, and there was a little bank, and I told mom, I said, sit on the backside of this bank, because I knew where the turkey was roosted, and I didn't want mom to be up there in the action and move or something at the last second and, you know, kind of blow it, because she'd never hunted before. But she was hard-headed, maybe we'll use that word, and she wanted to be up there because she wanted to see what was going on. So she squirrels her way up there, kill the turkey right off the roost. We get back to the house. And dad was feeling better maybe at this point. But anyway, we all ended up going to IHOP for breakfast. And I had changed clothes, and mom hadn't changed. And she walked in there wearing, you know, my camo or some of dad's or whatever. Just proud as a peacock. And I'm laughing as I tell this, but this is the God's truth. She won't admit this, but this is the God's truth. There was another guy there that had took a kid and hunted that morning. And the guy asked me, you know, did you guys do any good? And my mom, I mean, pumped her chest out, and she's going, we got one. We got one. And I mean, and she swears that's not true, but I promise you that's true.
I believe it with your memory, but that's pretty cool about that dinosaur, man. That's pretty cool that you got that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how she kept it. I don't know how. When she handed it to me in 2020, I mean, I was just shocked.
I bet.
Because I'd all but forgot about it. I mean, it was just a distant memory.
Yeah. So now you got to start telling us a couple of these stories that you told about some of these competitions. And no, he didn't tell us that when he told us that. Yeah, that's right. So tell us the one about the guy that went by Lowe's before he came to a calling competition.
Oh, so they used to have a show goblin, and dad'll remember this too. But it was its own separate division, and it was kind of like you're playing charades. I mean, like the whole crowd was into it, all kinds of stuff, but they would get up there, guys would get up there and strut around and really act like turkeys. But the one I think you're talking about is, this was at a contest in Ohio. And a guy walked up on the stage in the open, and he had a tree
I mean, like you would go to Lowe's and buy a tree to plant in your backyard in the pot that's about 3 or 4 feet tall. And when they called his number to go up there to call, he walked up there with that tree. And when he flew down or did whatever, I mean, he was busting branches when he came off the limb. I mean, it was an interesting deal.
I bet the MC couldn't hold that together for nothing.
Well, I don't think anybody in the crowd could either. I mean, it was certainly something that I'd never seen, and maybe he was trying to start a trend or get an edge or something. But it was quite the sight to behold.
Could you imagine seeing somebody today walk in with a potted plant?
I think that would probably be you if I had a guess.
I might do that, Corey.
Just get one of those fake trees and carry it around.
I might bring that thing back in there and sit there and sprinkle me out a sack full of leaves on stage and be scratching or something.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't uncommon. I mean, it really wasn't uncommon for guys to take, you know, the old Primo's wings up there and stuff when they flew down to get the wing beats in there and try to maybe get an extra point or something. Something like that was not uncommon, but a tree that was definitely different.
Oh, I love it. Well, so do you think, Corey, that, I mean, you're a lot of the like-mindedness that we are. Do you think that the generation that's coming up behind us is going to carry the same salt with them for these calling competitions that you've got and what a lot of the guys that have came up through it have got? Or is it something that we're losing year over year over year?
Man, to be totally honest with you, if you would ask me that question tomorrow, I might have a different answer. I kind of go back and forth all the time with it. I'm kind of like dad though, with, you know, kids running friction, which there's a lot of kids that run great friction. But you never kind of really see the graduation into air. And I'm not saying it's wrong. It just kind of is what it is because they're very good and they're very talented. But I do think the tradition of it and the old stories and kind of being into it from when you are a little kid like I was till now, I think some of that is kind of going away a little bit. But I think there's a few problems because kids have so many things to do. I mean, there are kids are on the go more now than maybe they ever have been. There's all kind of different activities for kids to do. So I'm kind of yes and no. Sometimes I think that it'll fall off and sometimes I don't think it will. So I really don't have a great answer for that.
Well, the
friction callings brought a lot of kids into it.
Right.
Yeah. That
brought a lot of new callers into it. It has.
100%. And I think the friction has brought, maybe more adults into it as well because, they're not confident enough running a diaphragm and jumping in there and calling in the open. But they are good at running a pot call or running a box call. So I think that's opened some doors for people to kind of jump out of their comfort zone and try something and learn a new hobby and meet new people and hone their craft a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And the reason I ask is I wanted you to give a piece of advice for, you know, you are a father-son duo that really came into this thing, may have been years ago, but if a dad wanted to get his kid into it, or if he's got some advice for somebody that's wanting, and I'm asking as much for myself because I've got mine into this calling stuff. And I was telling Nick today, I said, you know, he loves when we're out here in the shop or the shack or studio, whatever you want to call it. When we're out here doing it, he's really involved with it. He'll play the heck out of it. But if he's in the house, I'm like, did you practice today? And I'll ask him and he's like, no, I need to go. And it's almost like they get distracted. Like you said, they have so many distractions, you know, he's got TV and of course games and stuff like that. And I played games and everything growing up. I'm not, you know, saying that he needs to spend all his time outside because I didn't and I enjoyed it, but I don't want to make it work for him either. I want him to really enjoy it, but is there some kind of advice that you could give it? And I'll answer that backside of this with another statement, but I'm just curious what your thoughts on that might be.
I think for kids, I mean, like me, the reason I got into it is I wanted to be like dad.
So, I mean, as a parent, which I'm not, but trying to, if a kid shows interest in it, I mean, definitely pursue it. Certainly lead them down that path if they show interest in it, but teach them that, you know, they need to want to do it.
Right.
And it's a little bit of a parent's job to if you noticed it, that your kid is good in a certain area to push them that way and help them along. But for a kid, and there's some kids that come to mind. I mean, there's a lot of talented callers in junior division, Aiden Dively, and I could name a few others, but just stay with it. I mean, if you enjoy it, I mean, go get it. I mean, practice and take advice and learn. It's always a good thing to learn. I mean, every day people should try to learn something, but especially if it's something you really want to do, just practice and stay with it. I mean, nobody's going to be a millionaire by running a turkey call, but you can gain a lot of friendships, go a lot of places that you wouldn't have went before, and meet a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, that would be my biggest advice. Just work hard, and if it's something you want to do, then go do it.
It's a really good father and son thing to do, because it evolves from hunting back to hunting. You're learning the skill, and then you ultimately want to go hunting. It's a great, great father-son thing.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that, and you hit the nail on the head, you know, not making it work is the big thing for me, making them enjoy it. But I think it equates to anything in the world today. I mean, there's parents that tow their kids around the baseball fields, and that kid ain't got a bit of drive in the world to want to play baseball. They quit enjoying it because they were forced to do it.
Yep.
And that ain't my kid, and it ain't my answer to say it. So I'm not going to, you know, speak. I'm speaking for me. And I ask, you know, Sawyer or my daughter Sadie, I'll ask them, do you enjoy doing what you're doing? And my daughter loves sports. My son hates them. He don't want anything to do with going to no ball fields or no kind of practices, but he likes being outside and he likes being in the woods and he likes to go. He really enjoyed going to the calling competition. And I think it was, for me and looking at him, I think it was almost like he enjoyed being around the guys. You know, I think he enjoyed being around me and doing that with it. And so I've really put a lot of emphasis on, hey, you know, if you want to go again, kind of, you got to get out here and practice, and you got to work on this stuff. And as soon as I say that, boom, he's up and gone, because he realizes I'm going to get the reward of being able to go and being involved in this thing. And if I want to be involved in it, I've got to practice. So it's not necessarily a sport he's practicing, but it is a sport in itself. I mean, it's not a game to us. It's a passion. I mean, this whole hunting out, you know, outdoors or anything we do, it's a true passion. And I see it growing and growing more and more with him, that he wants to be involved in it. And I did it because I wanted to be with Dad. I mean, and I think that's why he's starting to take into it. So great, great point there, Bob.
I have a question. So Corey, you mentioned earlier you played baseball. Sorry, this is Josh. We didn't really introduce everybody. My name is Josh Underwood. I'm the non-turkey hunter of the group, but you mentioned earlier that you played baseball. Did you went on and played, you played high school ball and college ball, is that right?
Yes, yep.
So did you drive your teammates crazy by playing turkey calls in the dugout?
No, not in a dugout. I mean, it was kind of, you know, when baseball really took off for me, it was probably, I don't know, probably late in my sophomore year, maybe early in my junior year of high school, that I really realized I had a chance to play in college. Baseball was always there. I mean, it was always kind of a balance there in the spring. There were lots of days in the spring when I would turkey hunt, even as a kid, I mean, 10, 11, 12 years old, where you turkey hunt and then you had a ball game to go to the next day or maybe even that day. So there was always that balance there. But when I got into college, I mean, turkey hunting and turkey calling really kind of took a back seat, even when I was later in high school. Now I still did hunt, but it was really hard when I was in college, because we played two games on Saturday and we played two games on Sunday. Fortunately, we didn't play till 1 o'clock. So there was days when I didn't show up to the locker room till,
you know, maybe 11, and I changed out of camo and changed into a ball uniform and went about my day. But for that period of my life, it kind of took a back seat. And then once I got out of college, then the turkey hunt and turkey calling kind of came back to the front.
You went to school in West Virginia, is that right?
Yes.
And when you went to West Virginia, did you have to find new places to hunt, or were you still kind of commuting from home?
No, so I went to Glenville State, which is right in the center of West Virginia. So yeah, I had to find brand new places to hunt. I was 2 hours away from home. And it was different. Fortunately for me, there was a guy on the team, who was related to Ike Morris, and Ike Morris, is a oil and gas guy from West Virginia, and he had a bunch of property. And his grandson was on the team. So we had a lot of dirt to hunt. We killed a lot of deer when we were in college, and we killed a handful of turkeys too. But that's a good point you made. And I've kind of had to go through that transition twice in my life. Once when I went to college and find new places to hunt. And then once when I moved to Kentucky, I had to find brand new places to hunt too. So that's certainly a different place to be, because it kind of hamstrings you a little bit.
Definitely. Access is always a challenge for sure. So,
yep, absolutely. And it's new ground. I mean, a lot of the places still to this day, when I turkey hunt down here in Kentucky, I've only lived here since 2021. So a lot of times, I step foot on the place and I've never been there before. Sometimes I get in there and I've squirrel hunted it in the fall, or maybe I've fall turkey hunted, or maybe bow hunted it. So I know the lay of the land a little bit. But maybe necessarily not spring turkey hunted it.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you a question about calling competitions. And I've heard Michael Waddell kind of bring this up on a podcast before. And I've heard Joe Drake say this in the past before, is like it's like the callings. I don't want to make it sound like that turkeys have changed the way they sound, but they make it sound like there's different sounds being scored nowadays. Is that true? And if it is, what's the biggest change that you've heard?
The callers have just got so talented, and they got so good. When Jim Pollard was really good and he was winning it, he was making sounds other guys weren't. And the judges definitely scored it. You know, Dewitts and you know, the clucking and purring got so much better, the soft calling. And they got better. They advanced all their skills, you know. They're just more perfection. I mean, you know, you see some of the guys now, they barely make the call that's required, and they do lots and lots and lots of soft calling, and it sounds good. I mean, it sounds like turkeys, you know.
And I think to kind of jump in there, I think that's where a scenario situation really shines. Because like in the prelims, I mean, and you're asked to, assembly yelp or fly down or, cut or whatever that call may be, there's only so many ways to do it.
Right.
Right. If you're going to assembly yelp, you're going to cut a couple times, and then you're going to yelp and you're going to plead. And that's what you're going to do. But when you get into a scenario situation, you can be three or four different turkeys if you're capable of it. I remember one of the years when Matt won it, I think it was 2018, he stood at the corner of the stage in that spring scenario. And before he came off the limb to fly down, you heard three or four different turkeys that were just distinct. And that, in a scenario, in my opinion, that is when you really find out who can run a turkey call.
Yeah, and I think that takes a quality judge too, and I'm sure all along the way there were quality judges, but man, he just, like you said though, he just separates himself so far in advance above these other guys.
Yep.
I mean, these guys are, I guess they're nipping on his heels, but he's got some big heels, because they're
Yeah.
I heard there was, I didn't see the scores back there, but I heard there was several numbers between first, second place.
I think it was 10 or 11, something like that.
Really?
God almighty.
Yeah, I've got a picture of it here somewhere, but I don't know exactly what it was off the top of my head, but he's in another league. And I mean, everybody up there, I mean, if you're in the prelims, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, everybody in there is qualified. There's a lot of great calling. And especially when you make it into the finals, I mean, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of great callers, and everybody can call.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess the separating factor, you think it's just time spent up there, or you think it's just experience? You know, I guess experience probably weighs a lot up there, of getting up there, doing it, not being nervous. Because I'll be honest with you, know just as well as everybody else listening to this, this is my first time calling up there, man. I was so nervous when I got up there. It wasn't hard to make sounds, but it wasn't the sounds that I was used to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I think for Matt, I think, you know, and a lot of those guys that make the finals, I mean, that is their thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and you know, a guy like myself, I mean, I'm going to pick them up, and I need to change this if I want to get better. But I pick them up right after Christmas and practice pretty hard up through February. And then, you know, you turkey hunt in the spring, and then in the summertime, I'm growing a garden. In the fall, I'm deer hunting and trapping in the wintertime. And then it just kind of goes in cycles. But I think for somebody that really wants to succeed at it, and like I said, I need to change it myself, but, run them all year long. And listening to turkeys, it's easier said than done, especially when life happens and the seasons change. You get into summer and guys bass fish or crappy fish and grow a garden, do whatever people do. And then the season changed and okay, it's turkey calling season now. And that's when a lot of guys pick it up. But I think you can shorten that curve if you're consistent with it. I don't think you need to maybe necessarily practice 5 or 6 hours a day, but if you run them on your way to work and run them when you're driving in the truck, or pick them up for 10 minutes in the evening in July, I think that would definitely help.
I think I've run turkey calls more in the last 6 months than I know I have in my whole life. I mean, when you told me about going down there to that calling contest, I started picking them up, and I'm out here every single night. My doggone fingers got a callus on the side of it there from running pot calls so much, and I never would have dreamed that I would enjoy something as much as I have. And I was thinking about this today when I got home, because I've been carrying that trumpet with me about everywhere I go. And I was thinking about it today that it almost equates to the point I'm at in my life with the slowdown. You know, I used to have to watch TV, or I had to be, you know, going to a get together or being around a party or whatever when I was younger. And I almost enjoy that quiet, quaint time with myself and a turkey call. And it's funny how I told Sleazy on the last episode that never say never, you know, and I always said I'd never get into this turkey hunting. And I don't think it's the turkey hunting, it's everything about it and everything around it that's kind of intrigued me. And the turkey calling contests have just...
I think it's the friendship for me.
It is. It 100% is, and it's genuine. It's a genuine opportunity to meet people that you're never going to meet any other way. I mean, it's that, I think that's, and because everyone's there with the same mindset, you know, you got your guys that are probably going to show up to a contest and not talk to very many people. They're there to compete and go home, but 95% of everyone that's there is there to meet a new friend or to make a relationship. And it's all very, very relatable in everything that we do. And I never would have met you, Corey and Bob, and I, it was a pleasure standing there listening to those stories that you guys told for several hours. And just like tonight, the stories we've been able to hear and share. It's, I can tell you this, I cannot wait for the opportunity to sit down in an opportunity face to face around maybe a campfire or around a shop or a garage or here in the studio, maybe one of these days, and really have a genuine conversation, because y'all, Corey, especially you're closer to our age, and you cut from an old soul that's fun to listen to and very, very enlightening. So I just wanted to say that it means a lot to, when you speak, you can draw a crowd in a way that most people can't.
Yeah, I mean, turkey hunting guys, I mean, it's so different for me
than the deer hunting. There's a lot of stuff going on in the spring. I mean, you break through winter, the weather breaks, the trees are starting to bloom, the grass is getting green, baseball's back. It's just a cool time of year. And then you get the turkey hunt on top of it. And the other part of it too, I mean, especially now, there's a lot of guys that go turkey hunting now, and they've got in their vest, they've got a pot call that a buddy made, or a box call that a buddy made, or mouth calls they built themselves. I mean, guys are loading their own shells. And I'm one of those guys. When I walk in the woods, I mean, the only thing I have on me is my clothes and a shotgun that somebody I know has made, or I've made myself. And I don't think you see that in a lot of the other hunting aspects. And it creates a different culture, and it, like you guys said, it ties people together for sure.
Yeah.
If somebody hasn't went to the convention before, that one thing that they got, that you would miss out on if you didn't know it, sitting at the watering hole in the evening.
Yeah.
And getting to talk with different people, walking to different places, and just meeting people. It's like a family reunion almost.
Yep.
100%.
Those guys we look forward to seeing every year, guys that most of them you only get to see one time a year. Maybe a couple, if you're lucky, you run into them. Maybe you get to hunt with them, or, you know, maybe you luck out and run into them in a calling contest somewhere. But so many of those guys, you see them at the convention, you see them for two or three days, and you're super good friends. You talk to them on the phone a handful of times a year, and it's like you never miss a beat. I mean, there's a whole year that passes from convention to convention, but when you walk out of the door until you walk back in the door, it's like the convention never stopped.
Yeah.
It's a super, super cool event. The NWTF does a great job putting it on. It's something that if you haven't went, I think you need to just pony up and go down there.
I agree.
Oh, you went that first year without me, and you're like, we're going back next year. You're going to love this. And I did. And we both said that we'll never miss another one, good Lord willing. I mean, that'll be the place that we go to and get to experience it firsthand. You can tell somebody, like you said, you can't describe it until you get there. And I mean, I think this year they set a record breaking attendance of people with 77,000 people through the doors, and 77,000 people there, and I guarantee you'll find a friend somewhere along the way. You just need to get up and go.
Bob, where did they have the first NWTF that you remember going to?
Columbus was the first one I went to, and I think it was 1993.
Okay.
Corey went to that one too, but he wasn't very big.
Okay.
My mom was still packing me around because I wasn't born until September.
Did it move from Columbus straight to Nashville?
No, go ahead.
It used to bounce around. The first one I called in 2001, I believe, was in Nashville. But in 2002, it was in Charlotte. And then I know in 2008, it was in Atlanta. But when I was a kid, Charlotte, Columbus, and Nashville were the three big ones. Atlanta was kind of an oddball, and I think it may have only been there once. But through the history of it, I believe I heard somebody say it at the convention that one year it was in Orlando. Maybe I could be mistaken there.
Richmond.
Hershey, PA was the first one.
Okay.
One year it was in Indianapolis. One year. So it's bounced around a little bit, but I think, you know, Nashville's pretty centrally located for the bulk of your turkey hunt population.
That's right.
And, you know, Nashville's a great spot, but if it keeps growing the way it has, it's hard to tell where it may have to end up because it is packed at the Opryland.
I don't know where else you could go that could be that big.
They said that Opryland is the largest hotel outside of Las Vegas that has that big of an event center. So, and I can guarantee you ain't going to drag your rednecks that go
to
the
WTF. They just need to make it a week long.
Well, they need to, I mean, you draw is not just turkey hunting anymore. I mean, you have every possible avenue there now. I mean, it's turkey hunting, it's deer hunting, it's et cetera. But, I, it's, I don't see it slowing down. I mean, especially after COVID, you know, it slowed it down a little bit. But, man, post-COVID has put the people in the doors.
Hey, Bob, I got to ask you another calling question. Going around to these local things that we travel to nowadays, and I don't know how much, Corey, you travel, but, Bob, did you see a lot of the bigger name guys travel a lot out of state? Because I don't seem like I see that much. You know, like if I'm in Georgia, it ain't like I see Matt Van Sice or, you know, Jesse Martin or somebody. I might see Dave, but that's it. And then if you go probably up to your guys' neck of the woods, you probably don't see Dave or Jesse come up there. You know what I mean? So back in the day, did more of the bigger names travel around, or is it always this kind of, they kind of stay close to home?
Well, you would see them occasionally here and there. There used to be a contest called the Masters. Mm. Where you had to run so many calls on friction and so many calls on air. So it was a bigger contest. And those guys would come to that one. Then you'd have the Grand American, the Real Tree.
There was the U.S. Open.
The U.S. Open. And those contests were bigger back then. Mm. You know, I think the World's paid $10,000.
Oh, wow. That's
the Levi Garrett.
Yeah, and before my time, there was the Levi Garrett.
Okay.
And I think they had like 60 callers there or something. I never got to go to it. I didn't, you know, it was before my time. So there was more bigger contest that paid more prize money. So you did get to see those guys.
Okay.
You know, they would go out of their region a little bit. Not a lot of guys would go down to the Real Trees from up north. That was more of a southern thing. But occasionally a few guys would venture down there. You did get to see the bigger name callers.
We went to the Real Trees a couple years.
Yeah, we went to the Real Trees a couple years.
Okay.
But the contests were advertised more, you know, and it was more focused on the callers. Yeah. And in the little pamphlet that the NWTF puts out at the convention, all the callers that were there were named in that little pamphlet.
Yep.
So you could look at it and see who all was calling.
Okay.
And that was really nice. I thought that those guys got a little bit of recognition. And then if you did make the cut, you had tickets to the welcome party, and they took you up on the stage. Mm-hmm. And I think they even give tickets to the welcome party if you entered the contest.
Called, yeah.
And they took that away, and, you know, just a few things. I understand budgets and stuff, but there's a few, you know, little things that, you know, it was pretty nice.
Right.
They used to have the Caller. It was a separate magazine that the NWTF put out called the Caller. And in the back of those, it would list all the local contests that were had. You know, whether it was at a feed, any sanctioned contest, wherever it was, a feed store, high school, wherever, they were listed in there. And then it was listed who placed in all the divisions, the kids, the Owl Hoot and the Goblin, the Open, whatever it was. And there would be, and I'm recalling this as a kid, and I can remember my dad and Johnny Rakushin, they were having to ride around and qualify. So when the Caller came out, you would see who placed where, and it would have their name and where they were from. So then when you would figure out when the next calling contest was, you were looking at a map of the United States, and then you were comparing where the contests were that weekend compared to where everybody lived. And my dad and Johnny were going back and forth and strategizing of where their best chance to go qualify was.
That's what the guys that didn't call good had to do.
Didn't Michael Waddell say the same thing on our show?
He absolutely did. He said you'd show up at a contest hoping Ricky Joe Bishop or one of those guys wouldn't be there. And he said, doggone, what are you doing here? You ain't supposed to be here this weekend.
That's the truth.
And he was that guy might have been doing the same thing. You might drive 6 hours when you could have only drove two, but you had a better chance to qualify.
Right.
And I'd memorized like where most people were from. And so when Corey got a job out of town, he had to go out of town. He was working pipeline. He was going to South Carolina. And I thought, who do I know from South Carolina? I said, Steve Cobb, Union, South Carolina. And Corey got a hold of him down there, but he moved out of the area and worked somewhere else. But he talked to Steve, and they were going to meet up, but then he moved on.
Yeah, I was down there like a month before I realized that that Steve lived right there. And I ended up calling him, and we were supposed to meet up at his camp on Friday. I had Saturday off, and we were going to meet up at his camp and have dinner and, you know, have a bonfire, whatever, and just kind of hang out. And like Wednesday of that week, you know, we got pulled off the job and sent, you know, somewhere else. But that's a cool thing too. You have friends all over the country, right? You guys are in Georgia. I live in Kentucky, and Dad lives in PA. And you have those relationships everywhere. There's dots on a map everywhere for everybody that's involved. And you know that's another thing that separates it out too. I mean, it's incredible how many people in different places you run into.
Have y'all have never done a podcast before, right?
No, it's my first one.
It was pretty cool to hear. Nick told me today that, Bob, you drove down to Corey's to do this with us. So I appreciate that it meant enough to you to do this with us. That meant a lot to me and Nick and the whole team. I mean, for you to do that, that's pretty doggone special.
Well, thank you. But having friends that you called with comes in handy sometimes. On the way down, I lost my wallet.
Oh, no.
And I knew I could make it to Huntington. So then a buddy of mine, Brian Given, who I, you know, remembered from a kid when he used to call, Corey got a hold of him and met me at the gas station to give me some gas. So it's nice to have calling friends.
Yeah, Dad called me, and I was getting ready to coach a middle school baseball game, and I just pulled into the field, and he said, I forgot my wallet. I got 100 miles to empty, and I'm 25 miles from Charleston. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I get to coach this baseball game. My dad needs a tank of gas. What am I going to do? And luckily, I could make a phone call to a buddy that was in Huntington, and Dad could get to there and get a tank of gas. So
very nice.
No sign of the wallet since you left, I guess?
I did find it.
Oh, okay, that's good.
I did find it, so that's good.
Yeah, glad to hear that. That doggone podcast cost me my whole life. It's gonna take me a month to get everything back.
Tomorrow morning I was gonna have to hand him $100 bill and ask him if he needs directions to get to the house.
You want me to hit him with scripture first, or you want me to hit him with the rapid fire first?
Let's go rapid fire first.
You go rapid fire.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, y'all going to – I don't have this wrote down, so it's going to be off the top of my head, so it might be a little slow, but I'll ask y'all a couple random questions.
So the way rapid fire works when you got two people there, so Bob, you being the senior, you'll need to think a little bit more than Corey. So you're going to – he's going to say two things. He's going to say like blue or red, and you're going to say the first thing that comes to your mind or pick one of the two. That's the way we kind of do these little rapid fire things, and they're kind of fun to see what people answer on. So you answer first, Corey, and then you go, Bob, and then we'll go to the next one. Y'all ready?
All right.
Killing wild turkeys or drinking wild turkey?
Killing wild turkeys.
Killing wild turkeys.
Oh, fried or grilled?
Fried.
Definitely fried.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Diet for me though.
I know this is probably going to be an easy one. Braves baseball or Cincinnati Reds?
I'll take the Braves.
Y'all
red machine.
Yeah, I guess y'all are.
I got to give my age a little bit.
I guess y'all are Philly fans though, aren't you?
Pirate fans.
Okay. I missed that one. Totally.
Yeah, we're like 50 miles from the Pirates.
Favorite state to hunt outside of your home state? That's a good one. It's not really rapid
Nebraska.
Fire.
I don't know, man. That's tough. Ohio.
Easterns or Merriam's?
Merriam's.
Easterns.
Easterns or Osceola's?
Easterns.
Osceola's or Merriam's?
Merriam's.
Merriam's.
Yeah, I like those Merriam's as well. Let's see.
12 or 20?
20.
I'm going to try 20 this year for the first time ever.
I got to stop right there. I know this ain't really rapid fire, but did you ever hunt with a 10-gauge, Bob?
No, I never have, but an 835.
That's just the same. You might as well be shooting a 10 gauge. That's like TK Mike's old double alt booty Judy 4 gauge, wasn't it? Knocking his shoulder off.
Real tree or Mossy Oak?
Mossy Oak.
Ford or Chevy?
Ford, Toyota.
Fair enough. Toyota Ford. Fair enough.
Jeep.
Oh.
Jeep. There we go. That was a good one.
Deer hunting or turkey hunting?
Turkey hunting. You guys
got to
ask some harder ones. These are pretty easy.
Sweet tea or unsweet?
That's sweet. Sweet tea for you Southern guys.
Slate collar glass.
Ooh, glass. I'm a slate guy.
Mm. Trumpet or wingbone?
Wingbone, yeah.
Hardwoods or field?
Hardwoods. I'm a field guy.
Oh, I don't have any more. I could probably keep going and thinking some stuff. I didn't have nothing written down.
Oh, that's fun. I told Nick, I said, that'd be a fun rapid fire with y'all because y'all are so relatable to a lot of things that we do. So,
yeah.
One thing I heard was...
I was laughing there about halfway through because most of our answers were the same.
They were the same.
It's funny how you relate to your dad so close like that, so... Nick, what you got on her? Yeah. So we've got a new segment we started doing just a few episodes ago, and Nick coined it, Jesus Take the Mic, and Nick, or one of our guys that are in the room, we always come up with something that's kind of meant something this week or something we've heard, and we always like to.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet this week unless y'all got something to add to it. Mine last week was pretty short, but I was reading a little bit the other day in Romans, and this came to me as Romans 10:9-13. Y'all can look it up and read it for yourself. But 9 is that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus and shalt believe in thy heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. Go down to 13. You read this one twice. For whoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. So...
I like
that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
If you're going through
it might be simple, but that's an important one.
Yeah, if you're going through some stuff right now and you don't know where to turn to the Lord. And if you ain't saved, you might already get your ticket because he's handing them out and they're free.
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, I like it. Well, great way to wrap up the show. And I just wanted to say that from a feller that met him at a calling competition and a long haired feller coming out of the elevator, it sure was a privilege to get to make a part of the story that y'all are and to have y'all a part of ours. It is indeed an honor and a privilege. The stories that y'all shared in the Water and Hole, and a lot of them was shared right here, is something that when you hear a special word spoken from somebody, you can tell that you relate to them, and that's what we look for. We talk about it outdoors. We look to tell stories that somebody may or may not have ever heard before, and a lot of those stories that you were able to share, Bob, early on, and you the same, Corey, about having to come up through the ranks and your dinosaur to the throwing up in the corner. That's pretty unique stories there that nobody else has told yet. So I appreciate that from me, and I look forward to seeing you sooner rather than later, I hope. So, Nick?
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you guys would like to share with our listeners?
Man, we could probably talk for another 2 hours, but I think we covered it pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, one thing a guy can do if he wants to get his kid to call and to get the kid really prepared mentally and focused, not so much to copy a guy's calling or anything, but if he watches a video, like Corey watched Walter Perry.
Oh, I have my hair styled like him and everything.
Yeah, and it give him the confidence. So when he went up there to call, okay, he knew what he was going to do, what the plain yelp was going to be. And so nobody had to tell him how to walk around the stage or how to act or anything, because he watched those videos and he was prepared when he went. He knew what it was going to be to be successful. He didn't necessarily copy the calling, because if he could copy the calling, he would have won. If you could call like Walter, you'd win, but you can't do that. But it give him the confidence when he went up there to show him how to act when he was up there. And a lot of kids, I see they're not, they walk up there and they're not, I don't know how to really say this, the confidence, the stage presence, that when they walk up there, that stage is theirs.
That's good, solid advice. Just watching somebody and trying to not idolize them, but kind of do, so you know what to do when you get up there.
Simulate.
You
got to
know
practice.
How to call your own sound.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. We did that with Sawyer out here practicing for his first one. We're like, this is what you need to do. You're going to look at the judge and tell him you're ready. He calls out this first one. When you're done with it, you're going to look at him and tell him you're done. You know, you have to simulate that stuff. And if you want to watch some great callers, just look up the GNCC 21, 22, 20, 23, whatever, on the NWTF page on YouTube, and you can see exactly how they need to do it. And that's exactly what I've done for myself. I mean, I've listened to it over and over and over again to try to figure out exactly what I need to be doing or how I need to be playing it. But at the end of the day, go back to the turkey, you know, play turkey.
Yeah. You want to sound like a turkey. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. A fun fact, we were talking earlier about what those guys used to wear. Alex, you were talking about that. The NWTF, they used to be able to buy them. They were VHS tapes at the time. Used to be able to call the NWTF and buy a copy of whatever contest you wanted to watch. So as a kid, Dad always bought a copy of the Open. And when I was young and getting ready to call, 6, 7 years old, we would watch, you know, the superstars at the time, Chris Parrish, Walter Parrott, those guys. But yeah, I mean, if you really want to see what they were looking like at that time, those VHS tapes they're out there for sure.
When you were, I didn't even ask you this earlier, Corey, when you were that age, started calling, was you using a diaphragm or was you using friction?
I always ran air.
That's amazing.
I always ran air. I would cluck and purr, on friction until I could figure out how to do it. That was the only call I ever did in a contest on friction was cluck and purr.
Yeah,
and that was probably maybe till about, I'm guessing when I say this, 2007, 2008, maybe I started clucking purring on air.
Yeah, not getting too deep in the weeds, and again, I know we could keep going for hours, but I would like to get both of your opinions because some of the guys might listen to this, and it don't have to be controversial. But what do you think that NWTF could do to better serve to get more people into calling? Do you think they could add a scenario to it, or more like, I don't know. What do you think you can better it?
I mean, doing the prelims the way they do it, I think is a great way to separate it out. I do like the scenarios in the finals. And I do like having two, a spring one and a fall one. I've been able to call in both of them where they had, you know, the 2-5 call scenarios, and then this year they did 3-2 call scenarios. I did like calling in the 2 call. The spring one, you know, the tree call and the fly down, that was kind of hard to put together. So maybe adding a third call into that one, you know, tree call, fly down, and plain yelp. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what a good thing is there. And one thing I will say, I've said this for a while. There's a lot of guys out there that haven't qualified, and maybe it's because they didn't have the time, or maybe they just missed it. I think a really cool thing to do, and I think you would draw a decent amount of people to do it, is a last chance qualifier. Running on Thursday night, anybody that hasn't qualified, go up there and call, And if you make it, take the top 5 guys Thursday night before the prelims, and take the top 5 guys or 10 or however many you want to take, 2, whatever, and throw them in the open. Let them call for free. And if you're one of the top guys that gets picked to call in the prelims, and you pay your $250 and you're in.
I like that.
I think that potentially could pull some people, and you may pull some people that have never been to the convention before because they couldn't call. Well, now if they're sitting there and they say, well, I got a chance to call, you know, I think that would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
A couple years ago when COVID happened, they did the,
they did the COVID call off. That's what I've always called it. The NWTF's called it the spring seclusion when everybody was cooped up in their houses. And that was done all through Facebook. And it was a couple of days a week. And it was broke out into like an NCAA tournament type bracket. And when it was your day to call, you entered into a Zoom meeting, and it was, there was an MC, and there was you and the guy you were calling against. And it was up to the public to vote of who moved on. That was a really, really cool contest to be in. And I think a lot of people looked forward to it too. So I think doing some stuff like that could be really fun.
Yeah. I like those ideas. I like the Thursday night. It's almost like if you've ever kept up with NASCAR, it's almost like a clash there before, you know, the night race or whatever they did, and or Daytona or whatever they did to clash, try to get in at the end. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. I like that idea. So
wasn't where I went with it. I went WWF Survivor Series, son. You come off the top
of Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that's right. The Royal Rumble of turkey calling. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I would love to. I don't want to call it. Just let me MC it. We'll have some fun with that. Oh, me. I love it. Well, anything else you got, Nick?
I don't think so, boys. You going out of... You got a lot of trips lined up this year, or you just hunting local this spring?
I'm hunting pretty local. I am taking the first week of May off and going up and hunting with Dad. That's something we've always taken a week and hunted together, especially since I've moved. So looking forward to doing that. Outside of that, I'll hunt, you know, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, but not really traveling anywhere this year. Some personal stuff going on and things like that, but maybe squeak in a trip, who knows, but we'll just kind of have to see. Nothing really set in stone.
Yeah. Well, boys, we appreciate y'all coming on and doing this, taking your time out this afternoon.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
We had a blast. Alex?
I ain't got nothing else to say, but other than I appreciate it. I promise you one thing. We're going to be talking to y'all soon, because I think we left something out, didn't it? And maybe I misunderstood this when we was up there talking in the watering hole, but Bob, did you hunt in Africa at some point?
No.
No. Okay.
Mexico.
We hunted Mexico.
Never Africa. Okay. Well.
That's... And I think you got that mixed up, because we were coming back from the hunt, and we looked ahead of us there, and there was an old pickup truck pulling a horse trailer, and there was something sticking out of the top of the horse trailer, and it was a giraffe's head.
That's right.
Yeah. they cut a hole in the horse trailer, and there was a giraffe in it.
In Mexico.
And it didn't seem odd.
Oh, see, I remember something. I knew there was something, and I couldn't remember what it was, but that's a great way to great end way an to amazing end. Podcast, because stay tuned for next time, where Bob describes a horse. A giraffe inside of a horse trailer in Mexico.
Corey, I'll be in touch with you, man. Thank y'all.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys. Buddy, let me tell you what. I enjoy talking to them any chance you get. And I don't know that people will enjoy the show quite as much as we did, but I promise you they will get a lot out of it. And the reason I say they may not enjoy it as much is because you and I had the absolute distinct privilege to stand there in a circle and talk to those guys for, it was 2 or 3 hours. I mean, it was nearly midnight when I got back to the room. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a good conversation. Like you said, a lot of people may not get a lot out of it, but I think just, you know, their heritage, as long as they've been into it, it's been something special. And they're just like us. I mean, they're just a little further north.
So. Exactly. It cut from the same cloth.
Yep.
I always have to ask that about PA and the flintlock, and that's pretty cool. And yeah. I would like to do that fall turkey hunting just once. I mean,
Oh, Corey, he's an old soul.
Yes.
You get him and Sleazy
together, they could talk for 2 days.
We were texting when, actually, I think we were talking on the phone when we were headed up to Raleigh. And I said, you going anywhere this weekend? He said, no, I don't. I'm probably not going to travel much now that I'm qualified for next year, since he made the cut. He said, I'm going to cut firewood. And I thought, who cuts firewood? Winter's over, you know. But I don't know. Maybe their season gets a little colder. But
people, he's just an old firewood.
He's getting ready for firewood and his garden. So he's a good guy. And I'm glad to call him a friend now. So.
Absolutely. So. Well, Like Nick said early on in the show, we appreciate to them to come on and be with us and talk again. And we had a auction that we did on Facebook Live that, if you missed out on, was pretty fun to do. It was a little 15-minute auction that we ran for some turkey calls, and we wound up putting two in on it. And the total that we had on that was unbelievable in 15 minutes. But if you're interested in bidding on some of the turkey calls that we have, which right now we've got a table full of stuff that we're going to be putting together and giving the opportunity to bid on next Tuesday. What time do we got a podcast next Tuesday?
6:30.
Okay, so we may start that auction a little bit earlier. Try to start it sometime between 5 and 6 o'clock. It is going to start next Tuesday. That'll be 5 to 6 o'clock Eastern time. And I say Eastern time because we've got some buddies that are on.
Are you saying next Tuesday is in the 26th?
Whatever next Tuesday is.
So this coming Tuesday for when this
comes out. I apologize. When this comes out, it will be tomorrow night. So yeah, you're right. I was thinking, I'm talking like they're there now. But anyway, so tomorrow night when this episode drops, we will do a auction. And this auction is going directly to Miss McKenzie. Y'all have seen all our posts. Y'all have heard us talk about it on the show. It is money we're raising for her. So if you're interested in seeing what we have, to come on there, pay attention to the Facebook post, pay attention to what's going on. It will be live on Alex DeBoard's page. So me, if you can't find it, look for the tags. I'll tag talk about it in it, but it'll be live on my personal page. And Nick and I, whoever's here, we'll start throwing some stuff in on it. And there's no telling how we're going to combine these calls. Jeremy Crow has built two of the most unique wing bone calls, one absolutely beautiful one that's just a straight wing bone, but another one that's featuring a pretty unique set with a deer horn incorporated into it. And those two calls, along with two copper, and I believe that's Purple Heart Strikers. I'm not sure what the wood, Paduke, I believe is what the pots are. Sorry if I get that wrong, but I believe that's right. They're copper. Both of those will go up on auction with the wing bone and the wing bone with the deer horn incorporated. And I'll be honest with you, we might throw some more stuff in on it. Then we've got some other calls and things, and all we're trying to do is generate as much money as we can for that family. And we've got a couple of more weeks in this, at least one in the month of March before we drop out our big to-do for them. Mm-hmm. So continue to be much in prayer for them, and just, you know, pray for each other. If you ain't got anything that you need, you know, say one and be thankful. That's the big thing for me as of late. I don't feel like I need a thing in this world, but I'm always trying to be thankful when I wake up in the morning for another day, and it's always a blessing to be able to do that. So anything else?
I'm good, brother.
Josh?
No, I'm good.
Tyler? Hopefully on the backside of this, we got some turkeys killed. You not hunting.
No, I'm too old now.
Oh, man, I love it. Well, if you want to see what's going on with Talk About It Outdoors as far as the video series goes, make sure you check out Chasing Weekends on YouTube. As we say every week, we appreciate you being here with us. And remember, smile as you go, but don't forget, mount the memories. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work, or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab, or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve.
LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Are you in need of a decluttering barn or garage slap full of stuff you just don't need? Or is your construction site needing a dumpster? Give our buddy Tony at Georgia Junk and Dumpster Rental a call. With services ranging from junk removal to roll-offs, Georgia Junk is here to help with any and all removal needs. If it's time to get that parking spot back or the boat needs a place inside, Tony and his team can surely assist. Servicing Cherokee, Cobb, Bartow, and surrounding counties, give them a call at 404-406-3501 or check them out on Facebook at Georgia Junk. Clean up the yard in short order with Georgia Junk.